That's drilled out to left field. This one's got a chance to get out of here, and it does! Big fly for Albert Pujols. 661st of his career, and he stands alone in the number five spot all time on the home run list.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to episode 42 of All In with Kevin. I am your host, Kevin Lewis. In today's episode, I'm going to speak about the unceremonial release of one Mr. Albert Pujols by the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Why the fuck do they call themselves that? They don't even play in LA. Jesus. Anyways, this might go off the rails immediately. Anyway, I'm going to speak about that. And I'm going to speak about the NBA play-in, since that seems to be a hot button topic since LeBron James commented on it. I want to say it was a week ago. And, you know, since the Lakers are smack dab in the middle of it right now, it seems to be an ongoing topic. So I'm going to speak about, you know, my thoughts on that and potential ramifications regarding it. As far as Pujols, all right. So I don't want to be full on negative as far as Albert Pujols goes, because the fact of the matter is the man has had an incredible career, right? You know, he's one of the single best right-handed hitters. I mean, one of the best hitters, period. But one of the single, maybe two, three. For my money, he's the best right-handed hitter that I've ever seen. He's that good. For a decade with the Cardinals, he had a 331, 426, 624 slash line. 408 home runs and 1,230 RBI. Like, that is one of the single best 10-year runs ever. Ever. He was an incredible... He was a menace. He was an absolute menace in his prime. There was nothing that Albert Pujols couldn't do. Like, I just mentioned the decade that he played with the Cardinals. And even with... How kind of bad? Well, not kind of bad. He's been pretty. His contract with the Angels has been a wild bust. It's been quite the disappointment. But, you know, cumulatively speaking, you know, he has 667 home runs, which is fifth all time. 2,112 RBI. I know how we feel about how a lot of us feel about RBI as a team stat, but still, 2,112 of them is incredible. 14th in hits with 3,253. The man was an incredible, incredible, incredible hitter. He was a singular talent and one of the defining offensive players in the history of Major League Baseball. I feel like that has covered the positive. Right? Right. Okay. So the Angels released him on Wednesday. And this is being recorded at 12:08 a.m. on May 9th. So happy Mother's Day to those who listen. To the mothers who listen to the program. But yeah, he was released on May 6th. There are quite a few things that make me raise my eyebrows here. Okay, number one. Why were the Angels playing him that much anyway? Why? Your roster can't possibly be that bad. And I know the Angels stink, but your roster, their problems are mostly on the pitching side. Your roster can't stink that bad where running out Albert Pujols' ashes every day somehow makes sense. They ran him out there 24 out of a possible 29 games and then up and released him in May. Those two ideas just don't exist together. Reasonably, they just don't. Like, how do you play him for 24 out of 29 games and then release him in May? How does that work? I mean, you have Jared Walsh, you have Jordell in the minor leagues, you know, to play left. I'm not going to pretend I know the intricacies of the Angels to know like who their DH would be in this exercise, but it can't be much worse. It can't be worse. I mean, and the thing is, okay, I get the respect factor. Like, Albert Pujols has done a lot for Major League Baseball, and by all accounts seems to be a decent dude and all of that. So I understand the respect. And maybe this is just me being the cynic which is fine. I'll be the cynic or the jaded guy. I'm not exactly sure the word I'm looking for, but I'll ask a question. What the fuck do the Angels owe Albert Pujols? What do they owe Albert Pujols? Please tell me what they owe him. What do they owe Albert Pujols? What has he done for the Angels besides take money and be wildly mediocre, and I'm being kind, at his job? He took their $220 million or whatever it was contract back in 2011, I want to say it was. And he's largely been mediocre. There's no two ways around it. The counting stats were there at first, but you know, the OBP, the OPS, the OBP, the slugging, the OPS, the WRC plus, the OPS plus, those stats lagged behind. And then, you know, obviously from 2018 on, basically he's been a corpse for all intents and purposes. Why do the Angels feel like they, oh, this ain't Mike Trout. Why do the Angels feel like they owe Albert Pujols anything? Help me understand why they feel like they owe him anything. That I don't understand why. All Albert Pujols did was sign a contract, not live up to it, not win shit, and not even be good at his job over the course of his tenure in Anaheim. So they're sitting, like, I read an article and they're like, oh, well, you know, he deserves to play every day and we don't want to have him on the bench because, you know, that he's just not a bench player and that doesn't do good for any of us. Hello, it would have done good for you, considering whoever you replace him with can't be worse. So I'm just trying to figure out, what do they owe him? Albert Pujols built his entire Hall of Fame career elsewhere. He ain't do shit for the Angels. So I don't understand. And then you have Albert Pujols, like, oh, you know, basically they're saying he's upset with the plant because they sat him against a pitcher that Ryan Yarbrough, Tampa Bay Rays Ryan Yarbrough, where he was like 6-for-12 with 3 home runs or whatever it was, and they sat him and he was like, why? And then I guess that expedited the release, even though they were apparently thinking about doing it for a couple of weeks. He's mad about playing time. It's like, he wants to be an everyday player. It's like, all right, him being mad about playing time, I mean, he was playing pretty much every day. Why? I have no idea. Nothing about our Albert Pujols' current profile says, yeah, he should play every day. Nothing. There's not a single thing about the profile. He's been bad all across the board. The defense is bad. The offense is bad. Everything is bad. I don't know if he's providing good clubhouse vibes. I mean, the team's record stinks. So I don't know. We can't even point to that shit. So, I mean, what exactly is he doing to earn everyday playing time? And I get it to a degree when you're Albert Pujols, you don't have to earn everyday playing time. Fine. But when you're that bad, nobody owes you anything, though. Nobody owes him shit. It's the Angels. It's not even like the Angels are good enough where they can play Albert Pujols every day and they get away with it. Then, bruh, they got Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, and Anthony Rendon, albeit Rendon's injured or whatever. And they can't even keep their heads above water. And we're supposed to play Albert Pujols every day? Because he's upset? And if he wants to play every day, if that's the goal, his career might be over, because who the fuck is going to sign him to play every day? Who? Like, not even the Pirates are this stupid, right? Even though you can make the argument to you know, put fans in the seats or whatever, but not even the Pirates are that dumb, right? Like, who is going to sign Albert Pujols with the intention of actually playing him? Because you're signing a well below replacement level player. And you're signing him for what reason? Why? To do what? It's not like you expect him to be productive. He's not that. He stinks right now. It is what it is. Like, Albert Pujols is a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest hitters ever. Okay, cool. Right now, he's terrible. Objectively, he's just terrible. By whatever metric you want to put, he's terrible. So who exactly is going to sign him and play him every day? That part I'm lost on. And why the Angels owe him anything, I'm also lost on. I'm perplexed as to why. And I'm really perplexed as to If you were releasing him in May, why the fuck didn't you do this shit in spring training? Where at least Albert Pujols maybe could have latched on somewhere else. I don't know. Maybe he could have latched on somewhere else and at least maybe competed for a spot. Because I'm sure people would have been more open to it back then. You know, in February, January, whatever. They would have been more open to letting him compete for a job or whatever. But as it is, you release him in May. That doesn't do anything for anybody because you played him for 20 fucking four games before you cut him. And he was doing nothing for you. And now you release him in the middle of May where it's going to be harder for him to find a job because all the teams that could potentially sign him, even if it's a gimmick, nobody is willing to admit that they're out of it yet. Nobody. And that's the exact kind of team that would sign Albert Pujols. Fuck it. We ain't got nothing to play for anyway. Let's sign him, put some fans in the seats, whatever. Let him have a send-off, blah, blah, blah. Nobody's willing to admit that they're out of it yet. So who is going to sign him? And why would they sign him? They got me in the system. Why they gotta do me like that? The Angels are acting like they gave some random slapdick guy a chance. Like, not no, like maybe he had a good month with somebody else the year before and wasn't signed or whatever, and they signed him in spring training and whatever, and he somehow made the team and then got a starting job. And then he stunk, and then they had to cut him. They're acting like this is brand new. They're acting like they were blindsided by this to the point where he had to release him midseason. What about Albert Pujols' last 4 years in the major leagues made this a surprise? He's been bad. Like, this is not new. None of this is fucking new. He's been bad. The Angels didn't want to cut ties with him for whatever their reason it might be. I guess they didn't feel like a legend should go out like this or whatever. And it's like, I get the optics. And I even understand the people who say treating legends poorly might affect you in free agency. It's like, bro, money talks and bullshit walks. You offer these dudes one more cent than the next player, than the next team, they're not going to give a fuck about how you treated Albert Pujols. And again, one more time, the Angels don't owe Albert Pujols shit. Simply based on results, they don't owe him anything. St. Louis? Fine. If he was in St. Louis still, okay, fine. That's a different topic. But he's not, and he hasn't been for a decade. Albert Pujols signed with the Angels, and he's been an absurd disappointment. Like, there's been nothing positive about Albert Pujols' tenure in L.A. Some of it is not his fault. But, like, yeah, they made no playoff appearances in his entire tenure. They've been largely mediocre to bad his entire tenure. Yeah, that ain't his fault. Like, Mike Trout's there. Damn sure it ain't his fault either. Like, the organization is terrible, as is. So that's not his fault. But his production has been downright terrible for the majority of his tenure. So I don't understand why the Angels felt... I mean... The Angels are a clown show organization, so it makes sense. And then they have Joe Maddon, who, of course, he's gonna sit there and play Albert Pujols every day, and he swears he's the smartest guy in every fucking room. So that's, none of this is really surprising, but it's still, when you talk about it, and I'm more or less spitballing off the top of my head right now, the logic is so goofy when you say it out loud. It's really fucking goofy. Like. The Angels feel like they owed Albert Pujols and not the other way around somehow. And even still, Albert Pujols doesn't owe the Angels shit. Don't get it twisted. But I understand that viewpoint more than the Angels owe him shit. The Angels signed him to a contract expecting him to perform. He didn't. What do they owe him? And I'd be remiss not to mention the White Sox, since I'm talking about who would sign him. Oh, it's a perfect White Sox signing. Tony La Russa's just goofy ass gets an old washed up veteran to then play over Andrew Vaughn or whoever young or Yermin Mercedes or whoever young players they got. It's the perfect quintessential Tony La Russa signing. Tony La Russa came out and said, oh, unfortunately, we don't have a spot for him right now. Look, I don't believe that man. And I know his decision-making is terrible. We know that off the field, and we know it on the field. So I know that man's decision-making is terrible. I would not be surprised if Pujols was on that team. To me, that's the only team right now that makes sense for Pujols, because Tony La Russa is stupid enough to actually play him regularly enough to make it worth it for Albert, and not so much the damn team itself. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. But ultimately, look, Albert Pujols, great career. I mean, he was great for the Cardinals, not so great for the Angels. Unfortunately, Father Time beats everybody. Like that's just how it goes. Father Time beats everybody. Father Time beat Pujols. He's 41. He's supposed to be bad, because that's what happens when you get that old. And unfortunately, I don't know if this is the end of his career, but if it is, it's a pretty shitty way to go out. I expect somebody will sign him. Even if out of pity, somebody will sign him. I mean, he was great. So I don't understand why the Angels brought him back only to cut him in May. That doesn't make a lot of sense, because Albert Pujols is not doing anything differently than he did 3 years ago. But ultimately, I hope he at least gets some semblance of a proper send-off, because bad send-offs for legend players aren't it. Like, he is good enough, and he was good enough and had a great enough career to earn a proper send-off, and this is kind of shitty. And it's even shittier when you realize that they should have done this in January, February, whatever. Like, if you were going to cut him in May, you should have cut him a long time ago, because all of the shit that you cut him for now existed then. Like, unless you thought Jared Walsh was going to fall off a cliff and not be worth playing every day. And even if he did fall off a cliff, he's still better than Albert Pujols at this point. So, either way, I wish him the best. When the White Sox sign him, if and when the White Sox sign him, I will record a very giggly podcast where I laugh at the White Sox for half an hour or so. But until then, we will see what happens.
Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jay! You think you can do this to me?
All right, so moving on from Albert Pujols, good luck to the Angels in their quest to get to 75 and 87 or wherever the fuck they're speeding to. I'm going to talk about the NBA play-in game. The play-in games, excuse me. They've been a big topic of discussion recently because LeBron, after a game, I want to say it was a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, said whoever came up with this shit should be fired. And that's after, in the bubble last year, he was an advocate for it. Now, obviously, maybe I'm giving him too much credit, and that's possible, right? And on the surface, yeah, he looks like a big phony hypocrite because, well, now his team is firmly entrenched in the playing game, and now all of a sudden he has a problem with it. And, yo, he probably is a hypocrite for all I know. But the circumstances of having a playing game after the season was abruptly finished in the middle of a bubble is different than playing a full season and then having a playing game. I feel like I should just point that out for full disclosure. That's just the case. Does it make it any less funny? No, but I thought adding that would make it, you know, adding that would make it kind of fair to, you know, to contextualize his comments somewhat. But personally, I see a lot of people are against the rule. I personally just don't care. I'll say this. Last year, the playing games were fun, right? They were fun. We had Memphis and Portland, and I cannot remember the other one off the top of my head, the other ones, but the Memphis-Portland game sticks out because it was good. But it's just one of those, all right, we get more basketball. That may be good or bad depending on your perspective on how the 2021 season has been. I have not been in love with it. So it might not be the greatest thing. I hope that the playoffs are officiated differently than the regular season, as it's typically always been. Because if it's not, it's going to be a long playoffs. But we get more basketball, you get more high leverage basketball, and you're not really affecting the bottom line. Look, 7-8 should the 9th and 10th best teams in the conferences be playing for playoff spots? Just principle wise, hell fucking no. Because if you were that sorry all year, why do you get to play? Why do you get to play to move on to the playoffs? Like half the league makes the playoffs. Half the league makes the playoffs. So why would we need to have the 9th and the 10th best teams fighting for a playoff spot? I totally understand principle wise that these teams don't really deserve to be fighting for no playoff spot. I get it. Like if you stunk the whole year, like why are we rewarding you with a chance with more chances to potentially stink? Why? But help me understand why that's the case. But I mean, again, you get more basketball, you get more high leverage basketball, and I think the bottom line this year may be a little bit different because you have the Lakers as one of the participants as of today in the play-in, so it might be a little bit different. But ultimately, like, yo, you're not affecting who wins the championship by letting the 7, 8, 9, and 10 teams feel good about themselves for a few games, for a week. You're not affecting nothing. Let's look who the 7, 8, 9, 10, and 10 teams are in each conference right now. Let's take a look. We have, in the Eastern Conference, we have the Celtics. They're not winning shit. We have the Hornets. They're not winning nothing. The Wizards, they're not winning nothing. The Pacers, they're not winning nothing. In the Western Conference, you got the Lakers. We mentioned what they're going through. Steph and the Pips, the Warriors at 8, they're not winning nothing. The Grizzlies, they're not winning nothing. The Spurs, they're not winning nothing. What are you really affecting? Like, okay, you change who the number 1 and 2 seeds play. Who cares? It's just much ado about nothing. Ultimately, like, is it a gimmick? Yes. Is it here to make money? Yes. Maybe that's what bothers people about it, and that's fine. I understand that too, right? Because it's most certainly a gimmick and a money grab. And I mean, a lot of things in professional sports are money grabs, especially now, you know, fresh off of a pandemic year, given all the money lost. So I understand if you don't like it because of that. I get it. I just don't think it's a big enough deal to be complaining about all the time. Like I see a lot of people have done since the rule was put in place. Ultimately, like, yo, this is not going to be decided. The NBA championship is not going to be decided by who sneaks into the fucking, which of the 7, 8, 9, and 10 seeds sneak into the playoffs. It's just not. It's just more basketball. And I mean, as far as the Lakers role in this, it kind of just feels like it's just not their year. Like, LeBron's been hurt. He got an ankle injury. AD's been hurt. He comes back. He gets hurt again. You know, it's like Dennis Schroeder, you know, he's out due to COVID protocols and all of that. And it kind of feels like one of those years where they just never quite get healthy. So if they don't get healthy, this play-in, play-out shit is not going to matter. They're going to get smoked. But it just feels like one of those years where they just cannot get healthy. And I hope I'm wrong, because them as constructed would make the playoffs more fun, period. So I hope I'm wrong. I hope they do get healthy, and I hope they do well enough to get deep into the playoffs so we can see them versus like the Clippers and the Suns, the Jazz, one or two of those teams. I mean, not so much the Jazz. Don't nobody give a fuck about the Jazz. Sorry to break it to you. Number two seed in the conference. That's cool. The Jazz are a good team. Do you give a fuck about Donovan Mitchell? Because I don't. Do you give a fuck about Rudy Gobert? Because I don't. Like, I just don't care about the Jazz. And I know, like, given how hard I go for, like, small market teams and, you know, lesser known or lesser hyped great players, whatever. I know that flies in the face of pretty much a lot of what I stand for. But bro, don't nobody give a fuck about the Jazz. I'll say it again. We ain't give a fuck about the Jazz when they was popping. We was kids, and we ain't care about the Jazz. We knew Karl Malone was swaggerless, and we have the extracurricular stuff that I'm not gonna get into. We knew the Jazz were swaggerless. We knew the Jazz were boring. The Jazz are still swaggerless, and still their style of play is better. I'll give them that. But they're still swaggerless. They still ain't got no personality. They still ain't got no flair. Don't nobody give a fuck about the Jazz. We're ultimately like, yo, I hope the Lakers get their shit together because it would make the playoffs more fun. I hope the Nets get healthy. I hope the Bucks and Sixers and whoever else get and stay healthy. I just want a really good playoffs because, quite frankly, the regular season has been kind of disappointing. Because the gap between offense and defense right now in the NBA, it's wide. For tactical reasons, for skill reasons, and then on top of that, you have how the referees officiating. You can't do shit. Like, you can't touch these dudes. You can't breathe near these dudes. And then you have these dudes with all these tactics to gain fouls and all of that shit. You can't do nothing. Hopefully that changes in the postseason, because the regular season has been disappointing. The Knicks have been my favorite team to watch. Shockingly enough, because I quit rooting for the Knicks 4 or 5 years ago, but they've been my favorite team to watch. Like, they have an exciting blend of young talent and slightly older talent, and then you have their defense, which is ravenous. Like, they get after it. Like, they're tough, they're physical, they grind. Like, the offense is not always pretty to watch, but Julius Randle's fun. Watching RJ Barrett develop is fun. They've been fun. Like, the Nets have been fun. The Mavericks have been, to a lesser degree, kind of fun. But I said that, I don't know. The gap between offense and defense is a little bit too wide for me right now. And this is coming from somebody who is all about, you know, adapting. And I think as far as the talent goes on defense, I think the talent is there to be good. But there's only so much that you could do when you're being hamstrung, actively being hamstrung. Like, the rules all benefit the offense, and then you have interpretations of those rules which even benefit the offense more. So what are you supposed to do? You can't do shit without fouling. You can't look at these people too hard without fouling. Like, you got guys doing the old, you know, stick their arm under your arm and flail trick. That works. What are you supposed to do? I sincerely hope that the playoffs is called differently. Like, that's all that I can really say on that front. But as of now, like, if you force me to make a pick, you know, world's about to end, life's on the line or whatever, like, I think the Bucks might win the championship. And I feel really uncomfortable saying that because Mike Budenholzer coaches the Bucks. And I think he is the main thing holding them back, and he is still there. But the Nets are great, and look, if they're healthy, they're probably going to steamroll everybody, right? But they haven't played much together, and the thing about Budenholzer being the coach or whatever, like, Steve Nash is the coach on the other side. What the fuck does he even do besides sit there? I don't know. What does he do? But the Bucks have the kind of offensive weapons that can make the Nets' lives hell because they don't defend well. So, like, right now, like, I think the Bucks, I think I picked the Bucks to win a championship. And I feel very uncomfortable with that because I don't trust Mike Budenholzer at all. Like, I feel comfortable dismissing the Sixers because, I mean, you Ben Simmons, we've been over his flaws 1 million times over. I don't feel like getting too far into that, but they're there. He is their second best player, and he, at most times, doesn't even look at the basket. Tobias Harris, I don't trust at all. Like, they have shooters around them, I'll give them that, but I don't think they have enough. I think they need another significant piece in a way that Tobias Harris just isn't. Tobias Harris is a perfectly nice player, but there's a reason he's been traded 47 times. He's just not it like that. He's not. Like, he's a cool player. He's not a difference maker on that kind of level. He's just not. But, I mean, we will see what the NBA playoffs provides. But back to the main point, the play-in, I'm cool with it. It's more basketball. It's more suspense. And it's not coming at the cost of anything. Like, unless you think the 7, 8, 9, and 10 seeds fighting for the playoffs is some breach of integrity code. It's not really stopping anything. It's just not flying in the face of anything. It's not hurting anybody.
Sanction me with your army. Oh, wait a minute. You don't have an army. I guess that means you need to shut the fuck up. That's what I'd do if I had no army. I would shut the fuck up.
It's just there, and those who don't like it will still watch the games, and we will all be all right at the end of the day. We will see how the playoffs end up turning out, but the Lakers being in the play-in game and the Warriors also potentially being in the play-in games is pretty interesting, and that might add a wrinkle. Even though if the Lakers find a way to not make the playoffs, I could bet a decent amount of money that rule is going to be gone by this time next year. So there's that. But I'm intrigued to see how the playoffs play out, because it's kind of wide open, but not really at the same time. Because like, if the Lakers are going to not be healthy, then the playoffs definitely becomes wide open, at least in the Western Conference. It definitely does. The Nets, we'll see what they do. I feel like they're going to smoke everybody in the East if they stay healthy. But again, that's a big ass if as well. So I'm intrigued to see how the playoffs go, and I'm ready for it to start, because the regular season has been tired for a long time. And I mean, 82 game, well, this was what, 72, 75, whatever it is this year, like, it's just too much. And then the basketball just hasn't been up to snuff like that. So it's even bigger of a drag. So I'm ready for the playoffs to start. I just am. On that note, I would implore you to tune into the Ascension Podcast Network. Obviously, you're listening to my podcast if you're hearing this, All In with Kevin. Also, listen to the Middle Initial Podcast, where Andrew and Jude discuss current sports related topics. And you can get that wherever you get your podcast. And you can also listen to the podcast No One Asked For with Jordan, Kyle, and Paulie as they discuss current pop culture topics. I'm sorry about that. You can also get that podcast wherever you get your podcast. And that is it for me. Thank you for listening. Rate, review, and subscribe. And I will see you when I see you.
I'm in control here. And you're going to give me what I want. You know what it is. Give me what I want. You know what I want. I've been asking for it for years. You're going to give me what I want, or I'm going to continue to hurt people you love. I'm going to give you what I want. Give me what I want. Give me what I want.